Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Do you ever see a successful woman on your feed or in a magazine and think, wow, it must be nice to have it so easy? Well, think again. Behind that glossy cover or smiling face is a ton of hard work, countless failures, and endless learning experiences. I'm Rebecca Minkoff, and I'm here to tell you that success isn't a walk in the park. It takes grit, resilience, and a willingness to take risks. That's why I created Superwoman. A podcast that peels back the varnish and gets into the nitty-gritty of what it takes to make it as a woman in today's world. From luminaries and game changers to women you've never heard of but should, this podcast is here to inspire you to take your next leap, no matter how daunting it may seem. We'll explore the sacrifices these women have made, the highs and lows they've experienced, and the lessons they've learned along the way. So if you're ready to be inspired and learn from some of the most successful women out there, join me on Superwomen. Together, we'll uncover the stories behind the successes and prove that with hard work, determination, and a little bit of luck, anything is possible. Hey everyone, you're listening to Superwomen. Today's guest is someone I watched for so many years growing up when I was teaching myself how to make some semblance of something good that was Italian, Giada De Laurentiis, the founder of Giadzi. I was so excited to talk about her history, her path growing up, what drew her to food, the challenges she faced in a male-dominated industry, and the ability for her to persevere. Take a listen. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I'm a huge fan. My husband and I, before we had children, because now we don't get to watch anything, watched you all the time. And then in my little tiny East Village kitchen, I would like try to replicate some of the meals you made. So thanks for coming on.
Oh, I love it. Well, it's been a bit. We've tried to make this work a few times.
We've tried.
So I'm glad it's finally working out.
Yes. I think there was a baby that impacted things on my end.
There's a lot of things that impacted, yes. But we got there. So that's good.
And thank you for my box of goodies.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
The kids' favorite food is anything pasta, anything
How
Italian.
Old are they?
12, 9, 6, and 14 months.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow, you're in it.
I'm in it. But
that's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of
kids. In New York City.
Well, yes. We've moved out of the city. I won't say where, but we moved out of the city.
Okay,
I pulled the plug.
Okay.
We got out of Nam.
That's a lot.
Yeah. The fourth kid was like the one that set me over the edge. And I was like, we will no longer be doing this.
That's a lot. Yeah. I'm from a family of four. So yes, I can tell you that's a lot of kids.
Yeah. Are you the youngest, middle, oldest?
Eldest.
Eldest. Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So I help take care of my siblings.
Okay. That's what the oldest is doing now.
Yeah. Which is why I only have one.
Right.
All these years later, I only have one child for probably that reason.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So let's start from your childhood. Were you always in love with cooking and food, or did that start later?
No, it started when I was a kid, but I think because when you come from a large Italian family and you're an immigrant family, because I moved to the States when I was 7.
Okay. From where?
Italy.
Okay.
Yeah. I was born in Rome. My grandfather was a movie producer in Italy. And my grandmother was an actress. And so, you know, I mean, to make it, they were very famous in Europe. But they really wanted to come to the States, because once you've made it in the States, it's like – then you've really made it.
Right.
And my grandfather came from, you know, a family of 8 kids in Naples, outside of Naples. His parents owned a pasta factory. It was burned down in World War II. He joined the army. He was stationed in Capri. It was just – you know, they didn't have a lot of money. Basically. And then eventually after the war, he moved to Rome with very little money, wanted to be an actor, realized he was my size. And anybody who knows me knows that I'm very petite. So in those days, you know, you're looking at Clark Gable. You're talking like stature, big, tall, yeah. like yeah, big guys. Not a little Italian man. Wasn't handsome enough, realized that, and was like, okay, so I can't be an actor. I'm going to be a movie producer then. I'm going to try to sell things, movies. And I think one of the best things he ever did was marry my grandmother, who was Miss Rome, beautiful, tall, gorgeous, you know, woman. And she was the lead in most of his movies. And he was able to use his skills from selling pasta when he was a kid in Naples to create a whole, you know, industry for himself, an empire. So then he moved to the States, brought us all with him. You know,
as
Italians
you
travel in groups.
Right.
We don't travel alone. So I moved to New York first and then moved to Los Angeles. But I was young.
Right.
And I flunked the first grade because I, you know,
because— Didn't speak English?
No. And in those days, my family was very adamant that I only speak Italian at home.
Okay.
Only.
Yeah.
Italian food, Italian culture, Italian language, everything. So that made it very difficult to go to school to try to learn English and then come home and not be able to practice.
Right.
So although I'm super thankful because I would not have the knowledge that I have today or the language or anything else, it made it really hard to assimilate.
I was going to – that was my next question, was assimilating as like a seven-year-old girl and you're about to hit that terrible part of like – mean girls, and you can't speak English.
And your name is unpronounceable.
Right.
And my mother, she believed that if she cut my hair really short for all my youth, I would have beautiful, long, luscious hair.
Stop which is, it.
As we all know, a big fat myth. But in those days, in the 70s, she didn't know
so
any
So you
better.
Had like a page boy haircut?
So I had, yeah.
Oh
and I was
God.
A bit on the chunkier side.
Okay.
And so imagine I got incredibly – I mean, I was ridiculed all the time. And yeah. not just for my looks, my name, and what I was eating. I mean, my mom made me chocolate sandwiches. She made me mortadella sandwiches. She made me – she would just heat up leftover pasta. But in today's world, that doesn't seem odd.
I think it sounds
great,
delicious.
But in those days
– you needed a peanut butter and jelly
yeah.
or your cup of noodles.
Correct. It was yeah. a different era.
Yeah.
That we just – unless you grew up when I grew up, and I'm in my 50s, so – you don't understand what that was like.
Yeah.
But terribly scarring as a child.
Yeah.
So I was very introverted in that sense. And also because, you know, my grandfather was bigger than life and the men in my family were bigger than life. So the women tend to be a little more quiet. And I think I just found myself and I found my comfort zone and I felt empowered when I could cook because my grandfather on Sundays would cook with us from a very young age. And then as I got older, I just realized how much I enjoyed that time. And I felt like that was the bonding time with him and with my family members, with my mom. I think that's where I felt like, oh, I can be seen now.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think I fell in love with cooking.
And so when you – as you were getting older and getting closer to the, you know, adult age, were you like, okay, I'm going into the food space? Because to me, it didn't exist right then. I mean, it was just starting. You were the first wave
yes.
to me of food and television and as entertainment.
So I started about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, yes, there was some programming on PBS. There was Julia Child, and
right.
she'd been touch and go for a bit on public television.
There was Martha.
Yeah, Martha. But Martha was more – she did a little cooking but more homemaking, mm-hmm. like gardening and knitting and all of the whole – you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So there were some people in the landscape but very few.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't commercialized the way it is today.
No.
Or cool for that matter. So no, I went to – I was the first to go to college. I really wanted to go to college. I don't know why. But before I went to college, my family and my parents were like, you have to work on a movie because that's what our family does.
Wow.
Because that's everybody. Nobody went to college. They went straight from high school, if they finished high school,
yeah.
to working on movie sets for my family. That was the career. And you just found your spot within movie making.
Right.
You know, there were people, some of my family who did makeup, like my sister did makeup. Like everybody did different departments. So I started as an intern for my aunt who was doing movies with my grandfather at the time. And I just interned for her, got her coffee. Then I moved to catering. Then I moved to wardrobe. Then I – like she just moved me around.
Yeah.
And I just realized after doing that for a year that
– You didn't want to do it.
Nah. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It's not that I didn't like it. I just didn't like the lifestyle.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God. It's just long. Yeah. It's long and it's torturous and that's not what I want to do. I always loved to cook. And at the time I just thought, you know, this was when French chefs were sort of, and English chefs like Michael White and Joël Robuchon, all those people were sort of idolized in a way if you were into food. And so I thought, you know, I'd rather do that.
Yeah.
I'd rather go into that kind of business. I love food. I love to eat. I loved desserts. I really wanted to be a pastry chef. So I moved to Paris and I went to cooking school.
Oh my God. That's my dream. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you moved to Paris. You're 18?
I graduate college.
Okay. 22.
So I'm
okay.
22.
Yep.
And 23 actually, because I skipped my first grade, had to be repeated because I couldn't.
Right. Because you failed.
Yes. Because I failed. Because I couldn't speak English. So yes, 23, I moved to Paris and I go to cooking school. Loved it. I mean, was it hard? Absolutely. I went to at the time, Cordon Bleu was not what it is today.
Okay.
Everything was taught in French. I did not speak French, but I spoke Italian. So I thought, Latin language, I'll get there.
No.
The first 6 months were rough. I wanted to come home all the time. I lost like, I don't know, 50 pounds. And imagine, I'm a little person. So imagine how little I was. I lived in a hotel. I'd never been away from my family.
Right.
I'd never been away from that cocoon. And I was scared shitless. So I struggled for a bit. And
what gave you the courage or whatever to just say, I'm sticking it out?
Well, honestly, my mom was like, you can't come home.
Oh, that'll help.
If you come home, we're not going to help you.
Yeah.
You need to stick it out. You need to learn to stick it out because you will never forgive yourself if you don't go through with it. My mom wanted to be an actress. She quit when she started having kids. And I think that sort of thought in her mind was, I should never have quit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend the rest of my life, you know, regretting that. And so she's like, you can't. You got to stay. So I stayed. And then, you know, my sister came to visit. I had friends come visit. My boyfriend at the time, who ended up being my husband, came to visit. And I think that they all staggered it. So it kind of helped every little bit, every month and change. I had something to look forward to. So I think those things helped. And then I just fell in love with it after, you know, 5 months. I was, okay, now I love it. And then I didn't want it to end.
Right.
So I said to my mom, I'm going to go to hotel school in Switzerland. And she's like, no, you're not. You're coming home. So then I came home and I just started working. I worked for Wolfgang Puck. I worked for French chefs
in LA. How did you like – you got back and you just like
– I started applying.
Wow.
Like everybody else.
Wow.
I just went in for interviews and I told them my pedigree. A lot of them laughed at me because I was this petite young woman.
Right.
I looked a certain way and they were like, you're going to work in a kitchen?
Right.
You know, and – at first I thought, am I absolutely crazy? I must be nuts for wanting to do something like this. And I think, you know, in cooking school in France, there were a lot of women who were there. It was sort of part of their dowry. I know this sounds really ancient, but a lot of Asian countries, they go to cooking school as part of the dowry that they're going to bring to their husbands. They're going to be able to cook. I know. And your eyes are getting big. And I know that sounds really odd.
What?
But we are not living in the same world.
No, we're not.
So – and even though the U.S. was at a certain place in the 90s, other countries is different. I think to this day it's still different.
We just don't realize
that it's different.
I was in Japan – 3 years ago, and they said, we love your feminism, but we can't be feminists here. And I was like, excuse me, what? What are you talking about? You can't be a feminist here. Like, it blew my mind. And it was not even around reproductive rights. It was around like just being an entrepreneur and a founder and a boss.
I think that we don't realize because we live in a country that's pretty isolated. Right? And unless you travel and work in these other and live in these other countries, you can't just go visit.
Right.
That is a totally different experience. But if you live there, you start to feel it.
Yeah.
It's just a feeling that you get. It's not even that it's in your face as much as it's just a gut reaction you get
from
just being out with people. So that's how it was. And so I realized pretty quickly that, like, I needed to get back to the States if I wanted to do what I did. But at the time, there weren't that many women in the kitchen.
Right.
There were very few.
Right. Mostly and there weren't men. Petite, beautiful women in the kitchen.
Definitely not.
Right.
Definitely not.
So when you were in those situations in a male-dominated industry, how did you sort of be strong and cut through and then make the leap to television? Like, what was that path like?
Well, I think that I just, you know, I aligned myself with certain people along the way in different scenarios. For instance, at Wolfgang Puck, Sherry Yard was the head of pastries. Now, pastries was a little bit easier.
Right.
There were more women in the pastry departments than there were in the savory side.
Yeah.
Or on the line. I worked for a French chef at the Ritz-Carlton in Marina Del Rey for a while on the line, not in pastries because I couldn't get in there. And I just aligned myself with a couple of sous chefs that were males and that sort of took me under their wings and sort of protected me and took me along the way. And I think that's kind of the way
– block and tackle.
Correct. But I didn't do that consciously. I think I just did it subconsciously. I just realized I got to survive.
Yeah.
How best am I going to survive? But it wasn't a planned thing. It wasn't like – oh. You know.
Yeah.
So that's how I did it for a while. And then I ended up getting a job at for Sherry at Wolfgang Puck's. And she was very mentor-like, but the hours and the pay was just terrible.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a little while. And then I realized, okay, I got a gig working for Ron Howard. As a private chef.
Oh, cool.
Because private chefing was coming in, especially in LA.
Yeah.
It was big business. And so I started doing that and I thought, okay, this is better pay and the hours are a tiny bit better. But you know, you get kind of bored because mm-hmm. it's always the same food. And I had gone to cooking school and I'd become very artistic. And I was like, I don't want to make mashed potatoes and fried chicken. I just,
right.
You know, and it's not that they didn't have a wide range palette. It's just that when you have a private chef, they want consistency. They want a Cobb salad every day. They want things in the fridge just to eat. And I just got bored.
Yeah.
So I realized, okay, I need more clients and I need to, you know, just gain a bandwidth where I can handle that. So I did that. Then I started catering.
Okay.
Because then I could be more creative, create menus.
Under your own company.
Correct. And okay. Just hire people. And I did that. Then I realized, wow, that's a lot too. I don't know if I can do all – just because you have to be a business person plus creative.
Yeah.
And I hadn't gone to school for business because unlike schools in America, in Europe, they only teach you the creative side. They don't teach you the business side of it.
I don't know that schools in America teach you the business side either.
They do. So. CIA does. A lot of them
do. Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
No, they do. I just chose not to do that. I chose to go to Europe because I wanted to be a pastry chef.
Right.
And I thought that would be better. Yeah.
So
– I realized how difficult that was. But I kept doing it. And then I was assisting some friends who were food stylists for magazines. This is the heyday of Food & Wine magazine, Martha Stewart Living, like all these Bon Appetit. Like this is the heyday of those days, of those things, which doesn't exist so much anymore.
I know.
And so I started assisting some friends. I thought that was kind of fun. The environment was different, much like what I grew up with.
Yep.
More of a shoot, more of that kind of thing. And 9/11 happened. And after 9/11, I got a call from someone I had met on a Food & Wine shoot. And they said, you know, we're trying to put together chefs and their families. And my grandfather was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Oscars that year.
Wow.
Yeah. And so she said, you know, would you be interested in doing that? Do you have some recipes? I put together a little – but very basic. And I got my family together. They organized a photo shoot. I styled it and I thought, oh, this is cool. Maybe this is the next. I sort of just went with opportunities, to be honest. I never really planned any. There was nothing to plan.
Right.
This world didn't exist. So we couldn't have planned it if we wanted to.
Right.
So I just kind of went with my gut. I did it. And then Food Network called. And this was the beginning days of Food Network.
Wow.
And they asked me to just put myself on tape. And I ignored them for about 6 months. Because food television, coming from a family who made movies, my family was like,
you D-list celebrity.
Correct. 100%. My grandfather said to me, you will destroy the reputation that I have built. That is just...
That gives me the chills that he said that to you and then you did it anyways.
For sure. First of all, I'm a female.
Right.
And secondly, he's, you know, he's making blockbuster movies with A-list actors and his granddaughter wants to go do food television. Like,
right.
What?
Right.
This is probably, think, 15 years ago starting on YouTube.
Or even some telling a kid on TikTok, like, you're going to ruin the reputation if you make content on TikTok.
Correct.
Right.
So it's the same sort of rhetoric that keeps going on. It's just different generation rhetoric. Anyway, so I just said, okay, well, I said, I'm just going to try it. Probably nobody will watch, so you'll never even know.
Right.
And I did it. And then everything just took off.
Wow.
And then years later.
Did you come back to him and say, big mistake,
I
Grandpa?
I didn't have to say anything. Because his wife at the time said they were going through an airport and someone stopped him and said, aren't you related to Jada?
Oh, I love that.
And then he was like, no, she's related to me.
Oh, my
God. So that's how it all kind of came around. I didn't have to say anything because he
love
got it.
That.
He got it on his own.
Oh, my gosh.
But I understand where it came from. How could he have seen? Nobody could have seen it.
Right.
And, you know, I think that when you come from a family like that, the expectation for a woman is different.
Yeah.
There is no expectation.
Right. So similar to the Food Network and also being one of the only women during that time to have a show and find that success, there was maybe less than five, I would say, right?
Yes.
Did it unfaze you because you were so used to that from your family?
No, it didn't unfaze me, but I always have said, this is just a job.
Right.
I am not better or worse. This is a job. I have seen so many actors as I was growing up and different people come and go. They were, you know, the red carpet was rolled out for them. And then before you knew it, you never saw them again.
Right.
So I realized that this was a job, that I should just take advantage of the job that I have.
Yep.
And know that my time is going to come and it's going to be over. So just enjoy the moment and that's it. And there were no expectations for me. So I was like, okay, that could be the best case scenario.
Oh my gosh.
And I just went on the ride.
Wow.
And I'm going to turn left here and I'm going to take this opportunity. Okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it. There was no strategy. I had no strategy.
Right.
I just kind of just went for the ride because nobody – you know, I think in life when no one has any expectations, you could kind of just make your own rules. And when someone has expectations, then you feel you have to live up to them. The only thing I had to live up to was not to do anything that would make my family uncomfortable.
Right. Right.
That was it. That was the only choices. Like if I got something where I felt like there could be a doubt somewhere, I didn't take it.
Okay.
But other than that,
free game.
Free game.
So when you were at the height of Food Network, you have a baby. Talk to me about that time period, the struggle.
It's a blur.
You blacked it out.
I blacked it out. I edited that all that stuff. No. I had to have a lot of help. Yeah. I
talk about a deep bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that if you think you're going to do it all yourself, it's impossible to do. Luckily, at the time when I was deep in it and Jade was really little, because I didn't get divorced till she was five.
Okay.
So my ex-husband would come on trips and bring her with me.
Yeah.
Bring her with us. And he was great about that. And that was really helpful for me. And I would say also that I had a baby nurse for 9 months after I had Jade. Because I went to work after 6 weeks of having her, five weeks.
Gosh.
Because when I got pregnant, Food Network said to me, you didn't tell us you were going to get pregnant? And I said, because I didn't plan to get pregnant.
Right.
I just got pregnant and I'm married, so I'm not going to not have this child.
Right.
But I had contracts in place where I had to show up for work and they couldn't postpone it because of ad sales and you know, scheduling and blah, blah, blah. So I showed up at work 6 weeks later and I needed a lot of help. Jade was just tiny.
Yeah.
And I was still breastfeeding and it was a disaster. I was Leaking on camera, and had to have multiple shirts, and I'd get off, you know, like I would finish a recipe and I'd have to, that's probably why it's a blur, because I don't really want to remember the chaos.
Yeah.
It was chaotic. It was very chaotic, but luckily I had a lot of help. I had, you know, two lovely ladies that worked with me. That one of them traveled with me and helped me a lot. My ex-husband helped me a lot as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, luckily I had that support.
It was
my mother was living in Italy, so she
it.
Couldn't help me. Yeah. Yeah. And my sister had her own child who was, she was trying to handle on her own. So I didn't have that, but I had a lot of help. Thank God I could afford help.
Yeah.
But that is, I really leaned on all of those people in my life. There's no way I'd be sitting here today. I just lost my mind.
Yeah, of course.
Support, support, support.
Yep. So how long did you let that – I mean, you've been doing this for 25 years and you – and we'll get in – I want to get into Jadzy. When did you know, okay, it's time to switch gears? Or did you – or
so
did
So
they-
I would switch gears without knowing this every 7 years. So
really?
I did Everyday Italian for 7 years.
Okay.
Then I got pregnant.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I can't do that show anymore. I got to do a reincarnation of the show because – I'm now pregnant. I'm a different person. I realized early on that not to do a movie reference, but we are the lead characters in our own movie.
Yeah.
And we are writing them as we go. And I realized, okay, that chapter is done. And I'm okay shutting that door.
Okay.
And let's start a new chapter. I was lucky enough to be at a period in time at Food Network where that was okay.
Right.
And they were open to those kind of suggestions because the landscape hadn't really been fully discovered yet. And so I think they were just more open to
– It was like the Wild West. Yep.
Yeah, the talent kind of drove the programming, which is not the case today. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, so I just started doing, you know, a new incarnation, Jad at Home. And it started with my daughter Jade as a baby, as 6 weeks old. So like we just sort of rolled into a new version of the show. And then after that – I just sort of rolled into a party show, Holiday Handbook. So I just kind of every 7 years switched to a different theme.
Yep.
And then after doing that and doing Food Network Star and doing the nighttime and the prime time and all of that, I just decided that at a certain point, and it took a while for me to make this decision because I was very fearful of leaving Food Network.
Yeah.
Because when you're a big fish in that pond.
Yeah.
And then you get out. Who knows what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
But I really started to become interested in the entrepreneurial sort of journey. And I realized I couldn't do both.
Okay.
Yeah. Much like other people in my field, like if you take Gwyneth Paltrow, who's like, I just can't do both. You can't do both.
Right.
I did it for a while. And I realized if I really want to go this path, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't be working because you work. It's like you're living day to day, but you have no time to plan the future because you're so in it. And plus I had a small child. Like you have four kids plus you work. Like it's a lot.
Yeah.
How we all do it, I have no idea, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I traveled a lot. And then I got divorced and I was like, oh God, I felt like, you know, the world was crumbling around me. So about 2.5 years ago, I finally was like, okay, I'm going to make the jump and I'm going to put my energy in doing Jadzy. I'll still do TV. I have a deal with Amazon, so I still do a little bit of that, but it's definitely not the schedule I used to keep. Definitely not.
And does any part of you miss it? Or you were ready for the new chapter?
No. I know.
That's
I should say
hear.
Yes.
No, you shouldn't.
But
it's nice
not.
To hear that you could leave something that was so... such a strong base, right? And probably like a source of just like comfort and stability and be like, no, I love doing what you do.
You know, I think it's because I got burnt out.
Right.
I really worked so hard for so long.
Yeah.
I got burnt out and I couldn't see a path that was exciting anymore.
Yeah.
I need excitement. I get bored.
Right.
And if I'm getting bored, my viewers are getting bored.
Totally.
And I just thought, you know, sometimes in life it's fun to get out at the top rather than when nobody wants you anymore.
Yep.
And I just really was curious about the journey of an entrepreneur. And I thought, you know, when I first started getting funding, I realized, okay, if I can get funding the first round, maybe I can really build this into a business. So, now, whether that's true or not, but I can try.
Yeah.
I didn't know the other business was going to work either, and I tried. So I feel like I should just go with my gut and try. And as I've gotten older, that's kind of what it is. And also, television is rough on a woman. And keeping up is rough.
Oh, my gosh.
And time-consuming.
Well, also, as we – like, a friend of mine who's an actress in her 40s who does not want to get plastic surgery
– bingo.
– is like – oh, those camera angles don't look the same anymore. And the director was like, hey, lift your chin, you know, like, you know, keep your jaw up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is brutal.
I think that we forget or we don't want to think about it. And I don't think that younger people like ever think about it because getting older is for the older. It is right. Not for people who are young.
Right.
And I think, yes, it's – and, you know, I'm not an actress, but the pressures are still there.
Of course they are. And some of it is our own pressure, too.
Of course. Right? Like, yeah. Yeah, but our own pressure comes from the culture that we're living in.
It does.
We allow it to sort of infiltrate our thinking,
yeah.
Which is really hard not to do. It's almost impossible.
I think it's almost impossible.
To not sort of fall for that. So for me, I was like, if I don't do as much of it, maybe I will feel a little bit better about myself in the aging process. So anyhow, I still do a lot of videos and I do a lot of stuff. It's just different.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just different.
Yeah.
And I think we've come into a world where people want to watch people be more organic rather than so edited. And I was so edited for so long and I did it to myself that I feel like it's time for me to be me.
Yeah.
And for me to really do what I want to do. And, you know, sadly, this comes to you when you're older.
Yeah.
I didn't have that when I was younger. I did not feel that way.
Do you feel like you're making sure your daughter feels that way?
I try.
Yeah.
But she's in the age group where she's very, very aware of what her friends think.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to get, you know, anytime there's a photo of her, I have to get photo approval. And she's always like, Mom, that's a terrible angle. I look horrible. I'm like, Jade, you're beautiful. You're 16. Like, you're never going to be this way again.
Yeah.
She's like, my friends will see it and it's embarrassing and I don't want the boys or anybody to see it. I'm like, ugh. So it's very difficult. That's part of growing up.
Yeah.
So I try, but not yet.
We're just going to sound like old people. Well, when I was your age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I try to just bite my tongue and say, okay, fair enough. I respect your feelings. I'll find a different photo I'll do a different thing.
You're a better
woman. Well, I mean, what am I going to do?
I know. I feel you.
It's not, you know, she didn't pick this life.
That's true.
So
what is, I know what Jadzia is, but for my listeners, what is it? How does it work? Tell us everything about it.
Jadzia is, and first of all, Jadzia is my nickname. I know it sounds, a lot of people.
I figured it was your nickname.
How do you say that?
Yeah.
It's my nickname. It was for a long, long time. And so it's a lifestyle platform. And we do e-commerce and experiences and content. So we're sort of merging many different worlds that already exist into one,
okay.
Which really hasn't been done this way before. I would say that, you know, a lot of people when I was trying to raise money were like, well, why would we want that? We have Eataly. Pretty much all over the country. And I think something Eataly did really well was really sort of expand our knowledge on all these unbelievable Italian products that we'd never seen before at just a grand scale. I think that what's missing is the storytelling behind all of this.
Yeah.
Who are these artisans? Where do these products come from? Why should I use this product? How do I use this product? All of the storytelling that is emotional connection, that creates the emotional connection to the culture and to the country is missing from all that, which is understandable. I mean, a gourmet grocery store isn't going to be able to have the time to do all of that information. So that's what we do. A little bit differently. And I curate the products. I go to Eataly. I find them. Some of them are family friends who I've known forever, and some of them are new friends. And I tell the stories behind them, and I give you access to content on it. I also give you recipes that work around it and kits that you can buy that you can make the recipe with all the ingredients from Eataly right there for you to use. So the idea is that we're also diving deep into travel because that's something that people ask me all the time. Where do I go? Where do I stay? What do I see? How do I get there? Like, what's a, you know, all of that. So, you know, I'm creating a lot of partnerships in travel to really kind of harness that Italian travel. And everything is Italian. There is nothing from anywhere else other than Italy. And all the products are straight from Italy. And as of next, what is it, a week from now or so, we're launching a membership program. Smart. So we can really create this emotional experience with a community and create, because I think at the end of the day, D2C businesses, the thing that they're lacking is that community and that sort of emotional connection. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the product is there and you can go online and you can order it, right? But there's no real emotional connection to anything.
Yeah.
There's no real community.
Yep.
And I want to create, take the content, take the products, and create a community and an experience around it. And that to me hasn't really been done before. So let's see if I can do it. I'm going to try, work my darnest to make it happen. But I think that that to me is what's missing, and that's what people are looking for.
I love it. That's really exciting. And I love that everything's – I got married in Siena, so like our sons are have Italian names, and so we're Italiophiles even though I'm not Italian at all.
Well, you look Italian.
Oh, well, thanks.
You could be an honorary Italian.
Yes.
I mean, so that's kind of – I think Italy just evokes passion and emotion and a tie to a life that's a little more relaxed. I mean, I have a lot of friends who, you know, have moved from California – to Italy. And the first thing they tell me is it's really hard to learn how to live in a very feminine world. Mm. And I always think to myself, well, what does that mean exactly? And I think that what it means is it's just a lot more, it's a lot slower.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emphasis on taking breaks,
yeah,
long lunches, late dinners, enjoying family. Work is not of the utmost importance.
Yeah.
And so we live in a very male-dominated world in this country. Mm-hmm. It's very fast-moving. It's very work-oriented. You work, 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 you'll sleep when you die type of lifestyle. And that is not what Italy is about. And sometimes most of the time, it's very difficult to switch gears like that. Mm-hmm. And you struggle because if you want something repaired, it could be a month before you get it repaired.
Right.
Where if you come from the States – everything's calendared. Everything's scheduled. What do you mean you're not going to show up today?
Right.
I'm not going to show up because I don't feel like it.
Right.
That doesn't ever happen. You don't go to a store and there's a sign that says I'm out for lunch for 2 hours. Like that just doesn't happen. I'll be back in 20
minutes.
But
that's what's so beautiful about
that
country.
But that's the beauty of it. Right. Yeah. So I think that is the part of the romanticism on top of the food, on top of the warmth of that country.
Yeah. So what's been the hardest lesson being an entrepreneur that you've learned so far? You're 2 years in, right?
I am, yes, 2.5 years in, yeah. I think for me, since I didn't go to business school and I was never trained in this world, the lingo is very difficult.
Yep.
I feel like it's a club I'm not a part of. It makes me feel very uneducated.
I remember.
And small.
Yeah. Googling. Like, EBITDA? Why do they keep saying this word?
KPIs and all of these. Ugh, I'm like, terrible. CACs. And I'm like, what?
I am eventually going to write a dictionary. I'm just letting you know.
I'm just saying, like, it's tough. And also, to be honest, being taken seriously, especially my first round out.
Wow.
A lot of these investors are men.
Yeah.
I know that we talk a lot about there's a lot of female investors. Yes, but they're. It's a tiny, tiny fraction.
Right. And these female investors are very scared to make a mistake.
Correct.
They're getting money from men.
Correct.
And they're like, oh, another woman who failed.
Correct.
Yep.
So I spoke to a lot of men. And I think that a female, yes, but also a celebrity made it difficult for people to take me seriously. The main question was, how much time are you really going to be able to spend on this?
Right.
And – do you really know what you're doing?
Right.
And I don't know. You know, maybe you should just wait a little longer to get funding. That would be my advice to you. And others said to me, one in particular was like, I have a better idea. I want to start an Italian gourmet store. And I'll do it online too. And you can just be my partner. And I'll run it.
Oh my gosh. You were like, no, thanks.
Thought, after an hour of pitching you, that's your answer to me?
Right.
So – you know, there were moments where I was just like, oh man, this is more the reason to make it work.
Yeah.
And you know, I think if you're on this planet long enough, you will face those things over and over. And part of it is great because it really drives you to make a point, to become successful. The same exact thing happened in Vegas, where I got offered this spot, and then the powers that be tried to control every move I made because I was a woman, so they thought they could.
Mm-hmm.
And when I battled them, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
It was very hard.
Yeah. So, I feel like in a way, as unpleasant as those situations are, it's a test for just being an entrepreneur and the hard shit that comes your way. So if you're not up for like that, then you probably shouldn't be in this male-dominated world that we live in.
Correct.
As an entrepreneur.
Well, it's a male-dominated world in everything we do.
True.
But fair. Yes, and I say that to my staff all the time.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody – this is not the world for everyone.
Right.
You have to be cut out for this type of job.
Yeah.
And it entails a lot – and it asks a lot of you.
Yeah.
Especially because I have mostly all women. I have two men. That's it.
Yeah.
And for a lot of the ladies, they have children. Mm-hmm. And this is a very difficult business to have young children in.
Yeah.
And you really have to be dedicated. And I tell them all the time, it's not that you're failing. It's just this is not for you. You got to find something that makes you happy. And this world is difficult.
Yeah.
Time consuming, lots of pressure, and you have to be up for the challenge.
Yeah, for sure. So I just – you might say you already answered this, but I'm curious – any advice you'd like to leave listeners with that you either learned the hard way or you want to pass on?
You know, I think I would say that just don't – if you can avoid listening to the noise, don't listen to everybody else's expert opinion.
Yeah.
In the sense of, sure, you can hear it. But you can make your own decisions and have faith in yourself. And if you're going to go on this entrepreneurial journey, you don't have to wait to have the perfect structure. I think just start early raising money and building what you want. You don't have to have the perfect infrastructure. Things will just evolve.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first started Jodzy, a lot of people said to me, people that I would go to for advice would say to me, you need a catch. What's your hook?
Yeah.
What's your product? What's your hook? What's – you know, I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, well, when you figure it out,
you come back
to us.
Yeah.
And I think you just have to go with your gut and know that sometimes things don't play out the way that other people have constructed it for you.
Mm-hmm.
That there isn't always the perfect path. And sometimes when there isn't this perfect path is when you actually succeed.
Yeah.
And – This is just a journey. It really is just an adventure. Go and enjoy the adventure.
Yeah.
Forget so much. Don't worry so much about what the outcome is, because it's the moments of building that are the ones you're always going to remember.
Yep.
You're not – once you get to the top of the mountain, sure, you could have all the money in the world and success, but I promise you, you will have been the happiest when you were in it.
Yep.
And building it.
100%.
And I think that unfortunately we miss that a little bit. And we don't enjoy enough of the journey up there. And I know everybody says that, but
it's so true.
Listen to yourself. You know best what you want to spend your time doing, no matter what it is.
I love that. I'm glad you're saying that, because even though I remind myself of that daily, someone told me a story about a person who sold their company for over $1 billion, and they spent like a year doing everything they thought they always wanted to do and never had time for it, and they were bored. And guess what they did? They went back and started another fucking company. You're just like, oh, right. Okay. Yes. Reminder. Before we wrap, what is one thing we'd be surprised to know about you?
That I have a horrible potty mouth.
Oh, I love that.
Horrible.
You didn't even swear once on this podcast.
Well, because I'm in front of you.
Oh, but I swear all the time.
But I swear, and it's not. When my daughter was young, my ex-husband used to say to me all the time, you got to stop doing that. She's going to say, drop the F-bomb at school, and we're going to look horrible. So yes, I have this little mouth has a lot of.
I love that.
Yeah. So I try not to do it on podcasts or on television or live television.
You're behaving very well.
I'm trying to, yes.
So where can everyone find Jadzy?
On jadzy.com.
Okay.
For now.
Yep.
We might expand and be in brick and mortar and stores at some point. But for right now, just jadzy.com.
I love it. Thank you for sharing.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Minkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.